Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of SLMA Radio, brought to you on behalf of the thousands and thousands of members of the Sales Lead Management Association. If it has to do with sales lead management or sales lead marketing, it probably starts here with the SLMA Radio Show. Today, as always, we're privileged to have with us the founder, the executive director of the SLMA, the one and only Jim Obermeyer. Hey, Jim.
Thank you, Paul Roberts, for the introduction. Yes, this is Jim Obermeyer with SLMA Radio. And today, our subject is the four most common mistakes in lead nurturing that can lead to failure. Lead nurturing, not to be confused with dumping all of your available content on new prospects, has a certain finesse if done right, but it can lead to impatience, frustration, rejection by the prospects if done poorly. In our program today, we're going to interview Howard Sewell, who's the president of Spear Marketing, about the four common failures of lead nurturing and how it can most often lead to failure. Now, Howard is the president of Spear Marketing Group. We're going to hear about more about them at the end. Leading B2B demand generation agency and a B2B marketing veteran with more than 25 years experience in lead generation and lead management. Howard, welcome.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
You've got such a nice, deep voice today, Howard.
That's partly because I caught a cold on the weekend. So, yeah, I have the radio voice just for you.
Well, all of our listeners appreciate it. Now, let's get into this whole lead nurturing issue. People talk about, I nurture our leads and I nurture all of our prospects. But for so many people, lead nurturing is I'm going to dump all my available content on them. I don't give it any thought. I just dump. And I dump three or four or five times, and I hope that that is sufficient. You say that you make the point on your website, and this is certainly not the case. Now, the term lead nurturing has changed somewhat through the years. Can you please tell us what your definition is?
First of all, I agree with you that there are a lot of things out there that are counted as nurturing. But for us, lead nurturing is any program, any marketing activity, really, that accelerate the pace and volume at which leads move through the sales cycle. So we define nurturing less so by kind of the activity itself, whether it's a, you know, newsletter, five emails, 10 emails, etc., telemarketing, direct mail, you name it, and more around the objective for that program. So if the objective of the program is, hey, we've got a bunch of leads and we want to increase the rate pace at which those leads are converting to marketing qualified leads and opportunities and ultimately deals, that is what we think of as lead nurturing.
That's interesting. It makes sense when you use the term increase the pace, the rate and pace, so that they will turn into qualified leads and or turn into final sales. And yet so many people think that lead nurturing, by definition, is, if they ask about a certain product, then I should deliver three single sheets and literature and PR releases and things like this on that product over the next 6 or 8 weeks and throw a phone call in there and we'll see if that's qualified them.
And that'll do it, yeah. No, I'm quite familiar with that phenomenon. And we see that a lot, and that's why I say at the outset that there's a lot of things out there that are counting as lead nurturing. I mean, the other common scenario that we see is people just sending webinar invitations and newsletters willy-nilly to their database ad nauseum with no particular relevance or strategy or purpose. And though those things are nurturing in the most basic sense, to your point, effective lead nurturing has a purpose to it, has a strategy to it. There's a reason why you send a certain piece of content and a certain message to a certain lead at a certain time. And all of that, I would argue, is with the purpose of moving that individual along the sales cycle and towards the point at which he or she becomes a customer.
And certainly the faster, the better. Now, Marketo says that companies that excel at lead nurturing generate 50% more sales-ready leads at a 33% lower cost. They don't mention speed. Do you agree with that?
I think so. I mean, I can't validate those numbers offhand, but I think based on our experience, certainly companies who do a good job at nurturing absolutely generate more sales-ready leads, and it stands to reason, right? At a lower cost, I guess so, in the sense that if you're not doing nurturing, well, chasing sales-ready leads that are ready to talk to sales, ready to buy, means basically finding prospects that are ready to buy out of the gate, right? And that's a very expensive way to generate leads. I've written on our blog about the trend around ABM and account-based marketing, and this notion that, you know, traditional demand gen and inbound marketing, and even to some extent lead nurturing, is sort of inefficient, and you don't need to generate 100 leads to filter those down to the 10 that are ready to buy, but you just need to find the 10 that are ready to buy and market to them. And I think a lot of the reason for the, you know, rise of ABM is not because all those things I listed are inefficient, but just because people are bad at lead nurturing. And there's a lot of people doing lead nurturing, again, without much purpose or strategy. And if that's the case, then yes, it can seem like an inefficient process. And conversely, if you do it well, you can qualify leads much more effectively, much more rapidly, and see a much better return from, you know, the money you're spending generating those leads in the first place.
I've noticed that some of the Marketos in life, Eloquaz and others, have said through the years that using their marketing automation programs, which is very much centered on lead nurturing, will increase sales 200 to 300%. And do you, I found many years ago, as I worked for Inquiry Handling Service and then AdTrack Corporation, wrote books on the subject, that I found this great phenomenon. We sent them literature and called pertinent literature, and we called people and had that contact. We had 200 or 300% better response from a sales standpoint, but that was simply because most of the leads weren't being contacted to begin with. So.
Well, I was going to say something similar. I mean, I think there was a point at which when marketing automation and automated lead nurturing was just sort of coming on the scene, where the kind of numbers you referenced were absolutely true, because until that point, people were doing very little, or what they were doing was very sales-driven and was very manual. So I think in the early going, I think marketing automation and lead nurturing, we need to be careful there, because, of course, one is a technology, right? One is a discipline or a method of nurturing leads that marketing automation technology makes possible to a large extent. I think it's absolutely true to say that effective nurturing increases sales, or increases sales efficiency, shall we say. I mean, you can quibble with the numbers, and I'm not entirely sure that I think of increasing sales per se as the primary benefit of lead nurturing. I mean, the two main benefits for me are, again, increasing the number of leads that ultimately convert to pipeline and deals, and the pace at which that happens, which we've already talked about. And then secondly, improving the ROI from demand generation. Because if you're not doing effective lead nurturing, then you're generating a bunch of leads, cherry picking the ones that are, you know, ready to buy tomorrow, and the rest, you know, die a lonely death in your CRM database, right? So now, you know, both of those things ultimately increase sales. The benefits of nurturing are sort of, as the lingo is these days, more kind of mid-funnel, right? So it's that's where the impact is had.
Let's get into these. I think these four common mistakes that you talk about, we've asked you to delve in, because you do this for a living. Your whole agency is to a great extent not only lead generation, but, I mean, you speak marketing automation, if I'm correct, and you speak follow-up, and you speak creating qualified leads for your clients. So what are the four most common mistakes that our listeners are probably making in lead nurturing?
Sure. Well, you did warn me this was coming, so I had time to think about it. I mean, these are the things that I think we see in our practice most frequently. One is relying too much on telemarketing. So there are a lot of companies out there that front end the nurturing process with an inside sales group or team of BDRs, business development reps, or sales development reps, depending on your choice of terminology. And what happens often in those scenarios is leads have to go through that inside sales group, that telesales group, as kind of a first step in the process. And no one else touches those leads until they've gone through the hands of those BDRs. And what we find is that nurturing can be a very effective complement to that telesales process, not a replacement for it, but something that helps those reps reach those leads, kind of warms them up, helps qualify them, helps filter out the leads that don't merit even a call from a rep, but to just hand leads to a telesales group and then say, okay, once they get past that group, then we'll start nurturing them, is, I think, a mistake and something that we preach against in the work we do.
But if it only, if they get fronted by that telemarketing group first, it must get through that gateway. Won't it, in many cases, because it takes so many phone calls to reach someone, won't it delay the whole process to the point where, in some cases, it never gets past the gate because the person simply doesn't take the phone calls or they just don't talk to them soon enough before the decisions are made?
I agree completely. And that's, again, a part of the reason. I think we live at in a time, and maybe I'm speaking maybe more out of personal preference, but, you know, I don't answer my phone. I don't know about you, unless I'm expecting your call. And I think there are more and more people that are that way, whether or not I downloaded your white paper, yesterday. And so, again, I think one of the reasons to incorporate nurturing, whether it's email or whether it's, you know, other forms of nurturing, is also a recognition that not everyone answers their phone or wants to talk to a rep 2 days after downloading a white paper. If I'm downloading a white paper, I'm just using that as an example. But does that mean I'm ready to buy your product or service or solution? It might. It might not. And I think the notion of lead nurturing is both to, you know, advance that person along the cycle, as I said, but also to figure out, well, where are you? And if you've downloaded this information or attended the webinar or done whatever other action it is that makes you a lead, where are you in the process? Are you ready to talk to a rep, or are you just sort of tire kicking or educating yourself on a particular topic? And I think part of what nurturing does is it sort of scores people, identifies the hot leads, flags the, you know, the junk leads, and makes those BDRs more efficient, because all of a sudden they're only following up on the people that are showing real activity and are potentially ready to engage with sales.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break here. We've been talking with Howard Sewell, president of Spear Marketing Group, and he's been tackling the issue of the four most common mistakes in lead nurturing that lead to failure. We'll be back in just a moment.
Whether you're producing a seminar series, users conference, lunch and learn, or exhibiting at a trade show, Validar has a solution. From capturing leads at trade shows to managing on-site registration, tracking session attendance, gathering information, and providing sponsors lead retrieval, we have a full suite of solutions for you. Since 2005, Validar has been turning corporate events and trade shows into better business. Call 888-784-2929 or visit us at Validar.com.
And if your organization's success is driven by B2B sales, then there's a book that you need to check out. It's called Predictable Prospecting. That's right, Predictable Prospecting. I know that doesn't always sound like that works hand in hand, but this book will show you how to do that. It's by best-selling author Mary Lou Tyler, in which she shows you how to rapidly add qualified opportunities to your sales pipeline, ensuring consistent and, yes, that's the word we're looking for, predictable revenue growth. You can get started right away turning your business into a sales machine by downloading your free sample chapter at MaryLouTyler.com, just like it sounds, MaryLouTyler. MaryLouTyler.com. Look for Predictable Prospecting. Check it out. Get a free chapter and see if you can't figure out a way through that maze today.
In a world where the speed of innovation and change in B2B marketing has never been greater, the only thing bigger is the need for clarity or a blueprint for a guide to what's really working and how to apply it specifically to increase sales pipeline growth, velocity, and conversion. That's what you'll find in the Modern Marketer's Field Guide. Download it free at HeinzMarketing.com.
Have you ever felt that you're not getting the most out of your marketing automation system? Well, you're not alone. But there is an answer. An award-winning agency called Demand Gen that can not only get your team out of batch and blast mode, but turn your team into high-performance marketers that drive more revenue and have the kind of results you're looking for. They also have a marketing dashboard to show it. Experts in Marketo, Eloqua, Salesforce, and dozens of other top marketing technology, the folks at Demand Gen have helped hundreds of the top marketing teams around the country, and they can do the same for you. So stop feeling stressed. Check out their services at demandgen.com, just like it sounds, demandgen.com. And while you're there, be sure and visit their resource section, which is chock full of videos, free templates, and downloadable guides, all of which will help you be a better marketer. If you need a team that'll get you to the next level, there's one waiting. They're just a click away. DemandGen.com. All right, let's pick it back up with Jim and his guest.
Thank you, Paul. It's nice to hear from our sponsors today. We've been speaking with Howard Sewell, who's the president of Spear Marketing. And he's been tackling the issue, the four most common mistakes in lead nurturing that lead to failure. So far, we've got a definition of lead nurturing, which also gave us some of the problems of nurturing. We found that, yes, in many cases, as Marketo said, Howard somewhat agreed that lead nurturing can generate 50% more sales-ready leads at a lower cost. What about, so far, you've got the first issue, which is relying too much on telemarketing, and that one just screams out at me as huge mistakes in the part of companies. I had a client once that I got in there and the sales manager said, we're not getting any inquiries. We're not getting any leads. Everything has stopped. And I looked into it and they had initiated an inside telequalification department that had 2,500 inquiries and they weren't letting anything through until the person said, I'm ready to buy. The sales manager nearly had a heart attack on the spot. So, and once we broke loose that issue.
I think I was at that meeting.
You probably were at a dozen meetings like that. All right. What are the other three common mistakes in lead nurturing?
So number two that I wrote down was, and this is kind of similar to the telemarketing issue, but it's not paying enough attention to the top of the funnel, meaning the point at which leads respond and first engage with your company and first enter your CRM. And I say that because I think there's often this notion out there that lead nurturing means nurturing people over time, right? It's the newsletter to the database. It's webinar invitations. We've got this database of, 50,000 names and we're going to stay in front of them over time until they're ready to buy. All of which is valid and correct and the right thing to do. But in our experience, where lead nurturing often has the greatest effect is at the very front end of the process, because it's at that point that someone is raising their hand, and there have been all sorts of studies over the years that show the quicker you respond to that lead through whatever means, the greater the chance that person is going to qualified and become an opportunity. And so the extent to which you put automated nurturing in place at that very front end of the process, I think better off you'll be. But it's something that not a lot of people place as a priority, if that makes sense.
Now, there's been a lot of research that B2C that says that you should contact people within 30 seconds of the time they were on your website, insurance leads and things like this. Is this what you're talking about, or you're just talking about isn't, again, going back, it's not telemarketing. You're saying that you have to pay attention, strategic, thoughtful attention to the very beginning of those communications and the timing. By that, you're also saying you have to give them the right information right at the top of the funnel. Is that what you're looking at?
Well, all of that is correct. Yes, it's about delivering the right information at the right time. But it's simply, in a lot of companies we talk to, nurturing starts sort of, once the lead's been filtered and maybe called by telesales and that sort of initial processing. Our argument is no, nurturing starts the moment that person fills out the registration form. And there's no one, recipe for nurturing that fits for every company, but maybe it's a series of, two or three emails that goes out to that individual relevant to, let's say, the information he or she requested or what you know about him or her, in the first, week after they've downloaded information or otherwise become a lead. So what I'm saying is nurturing is more than just communicating with people over time. It's more about the long term. It's more about sort of the keep in touch program. It's also about making sure that as leads come into the process, into the system, that they're responded to promptly and systematically. What happens if you go to a trade show, you come back with 1,000 leads, you dump them into the CRM system, and similar to your situation earlier, the BDRs take 4 weeks to comb through those leads, right? If you have nurturing in place, you can at least make sure that those people are being responded to and qualified and filtered in some form, regardless of whether or not sales has the bandwidth to call them directly.
It makes a lot of sense. By some form, I begin to translate in my mind that form may take different paths depending on the answers to the profile questions that people have admitted to, whether they prefer, oh, by the way, yes, I'm interested in a particular product and I'm interested in leasing or outright purchase or I want a black one or a blue one, or I want a different size or something like this, being able to strategically say one person deserves an answer that's different than the next person. Because so many companies, they say for every person coming in, regardless of their qualification, this is what we send them.
I think that's true, but that's also, in fairness, a function of how leads get generated. I mean, the fact is, depending on how your leads being generated and how many questions you're asking on the form, best practice is not to ask so many, right? Because that increases conversion rate. You may just not know a lot about that individual at that first touch. And I would argue another benefit of nurturing is the opportunity to learn more about that individual. There's a technique called progressive profiling that many of your listeners will be well familiar with, where as people engage with your nurture program, you ask them other questions about purchase time frame or industry or interest area or whatever. And it's that additional information that allows you, to your point, to be more and more relevant as you continue to communicate with that person over time. You know, if they downloaded a form yesterday and all they gave you was name, rank, and serial number, you may have to make some assumptions about what information you send because you don't yet know everything to know about what their interests are.
Makes sense. Makes sense. A trade show lead may have a lot more of these profile questions filled out than a direct mail lead or just something off the internet where the answers to those questions are optional. Okay.
Yep.
We got two. Let's hear the third one now.
My number three is only nurturing for a fixed period of time. And I think you described sort of a scenario like this early on, Jim, but it's this notion that, you know, a lead comes in, we're going to, you know, bombard that person with a series of communications over a period of time, whether it's 6 days, 6 weeks, or 6 months. And if they don't buy, or if they don't otherwise, you know, qualify to a predefined level where they're ready to engage with sales, we're going to give up on them. They're going to go into the, you know, into the bin, and we're going to generate a whole bunch more leads. And needless to say, and we see it a lot, that, you know, nurturing should, in a lot of circumstances, almost be indefinite, right? I mean, because especially in business marketing, you don't know when that person's going to have the need or the pain that's going to want make them want to finally engage with your company, buy your service. And so the notion that there's this, because I downloaded a white paper, to use the same example, that that I'm automatically either interested in buying in 6 months or not at all is, I think, a big mistake. And yet we see companies do that all the time, where there's this fixed length of program and they're wasting basically all the money that they've spent generating those leads in the first place.
Okay. All right. That makes perfect sense. There is no end. Just because they didn't buy immediately, there is no necessarily end to that relationship.
Providing they're the right person at the right company, right? I mean, if they meet the profile and they're the kind of person that ultimately could have a need for your product, yeah, I think it's you just keep marketing to them.
We've got question number four, and then I have a mystery question at the end.
Oh dear. Okay.
what's your fourth common mistake?
My fourth is, we also touched upon this a little bit, but it's kind of sending the same thing over and over again and wondering why people don't respond. Right. So it's we have marketing automation as a technology suffers from gross underutilization, not unique to any one platform: Marketo, Eloqua, Pardot. You name it. But there's just a lot of people who have sort of bought into marketing automation as a technology and think you can flip the switch and off you go. And what we see very often is people that are using the technology, which is capable of so much more on an automated level. You know, all they do is send webinar invitations or they send newsletters to the database. And though, again, that at a very basic level is a form of nurturing in so much as you're staying in front of someone, it's not the sort of relevant, personalized, systematic nurturing that ultimately is going to yield results. And that's where things like segmentation come in, right, where you've got different tracks in your nurture program and your finance people are getting one series of communications and your IT people are getting something different.
Okay.
It's that kind of nurturing that very often can make the difference.
Well, good. I think you've made good on our promise to identify. And I think these are stunningly easy to fix if you have the right technology or people, or if you simply sit down and think it through strategically. Now, the mystery question is, for you today, you run an agency. You've had hundreds of clients through the years. What is the biggest frustration you have with clients today in understanding today's marketing for B2B clients? What's the biggest frustration that you have that you just say, if they just would only do this, I could help them?
I don't know if I term this a frustration, so I'm kind of bending your question, I think, a little bit, maybe cheating here. But I think the biggest challenge that a lot of these companies have doing the kinds of programs that you and I are talking about here, and for that matter, demand gen in general, is content. And I won't be the first to say this by any stretch, but content is the fuel that feeds these kind of programs. If you don't have content, you cannot nurture. And, we are asked as an agency and as a marketing partner by our clients to create these sorts of, build these kind of nurture programs. And then when it comes down to the question of, what content do we have available? Webinars, white papers, demos, trials, videos, ebook, any of that, there's nothing. Or there's very little, or what there is product collateral and things that are, perfectly suitable for someone that's actively shopping and ready to buy, but not suitable for the person that just is really looking to get educated about your space. And I'd worry to term it a frustration, but I think that that's very often a challenge.
Okay.
Because if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's probably inappropriate content. Yes, I've got content, but it doesn't really apply to what we're trying to do. We're really at the end of our time now. Sphere Marketing is a full-service demand generation agency, and you primarily help B2B clients, right? Generate,
correct,
nurture,
yep,
convert sales leads to revenue, which is a big deal. Convert, nurture, and convert sales leads to revenue. You've got a proven approach to demand generation, and you've talked about it here, strategic expertise, creative flair. I know you're a very well-respected agency. You've got offices where?
Our main office is in the Bay Area near San Francisco, and we've got a couple of others spread up and down the West Coast. But our clients are all over the map. They're nationwide, a bunch of people on the East Coast and all the way in between.
Okay. Now, how does someone reach you, Howard?
Best way to reach me is probably email howard@spearmarketing.com. You can also contact us at our website, spearmarketing.com. I'm on Twitter at hjsewell, S-E-W-E-L-L. Just don't call me because, as we've established, I don't answer the phone.
Well, at
I'm
least
kidding.
you told everybody how to reach the agency.
That's right.
Howard, you've been very generous with your time today. Howard Sewell, president of Sphere Marketing Group. He tackled the four most common mistakes in lead nurturing that lead to failure. Thank you very much, Howard Sewell.
Thank you, Jim. My pleasure.
You've been listening to another episode of SLMA Radio, brought to you on behalf of the thousands and thousands of members of the Sales Lead Management Association. If it has to do with sales lead management or sales lead marketing, it probably starts here with the SLMA Radio Show, part of the ever-growing list of shows on the Funnel Radio Channel for at-work listeners like you.